Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is, so you want to be a writer? And the numbers to call to get coaching on writing or just talk about having what you want from the inside out. 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. That is 866-254-1579. Outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And before we get to you, I want to talk a little bit about writing. And for those of you who don't know, I mean, I assume most of you know I'm on Hay House Radio. I write books. But as well as the five books and coming up on my sixth book is coming out with Hay House in September. I also used to work both as a ghostwriter and as an editor. I actually ghostwrit my first book back in 1993, I think. And I, way before that, I wrote radio comedy for a very short period of time. And so I've had an interesting relationship with writing. I've also edited books, most kind of well known in the UK, or a series of books by Paul McKenna, the I Can Make You books, starting with Change Your Life in 7 Days and I Can Make You Thin, that have sold over 7 million copies around the world. So I love books. I used to actually work in the book trade. My first job when I was at drama school in London was at a bookshop called The Mystic Trader. And then I moved from there to a psychology bookshop, which was the biggest psychology bookshop in London at the time, called Changes. And so I love books. I love writing. I love the process. I love exploring the process of writing, but it isn't something I talk about it a lot, which is interesting. So I did with Hay House, one of the writer's workshops. And if you do the online writer's course with Hay House, it features a unit with me. And also, I'll be teaching writing, of course, for writers, not really teaching writing, here in LA at the end of the month on April 29th and 30th with my friend and colleague Steve Chandler, who's also done 30 books and ghosted a bunch of books and edited books. And you can find out more about that at michaelneal.org/writer. But I thought what I would do to kind of set the table for this is give you a little bit of my history as a writer, because my guess is it might disabuse you of some notions of what the writer's life should look like. And I think that's helpful. I think that actually opens us up to write more if we know that it doesn't have to look like what we've made up that it has to look like. And so I first realized that there was something about writing when I did a creative writing class in high school, and I wrote a paper called Mephisto, which very obscure, based on the Klaus Kinski character in the movie Mephisto, which was basically an actor who had no real identity underneath the characters that he played. And I found that an interesting theme. And there was something about writing about it that did something for me. And I didn't have an understanding of that, but I thought, ooh, I like doing this. And then when I went to university and I started doing philosophy courses, and I would write papers. So like I wrote a paper on Freud's Civilization and Its Discontent, which was a conversation between a man and a cockroach in an elevator, where the cockroach had to persuade the man that it's in the good for the good of civilization, the man's duty was to kill the cockroach. And I would write, anyways, I would write papers like that, which were very sophomoric, literally. And, but I discovered that there was something about expressing through words that was different to how I expressed when I spoke. There was something about expressing in writing that was different to other forms of expression. And I thought, oh, maybe this is something I should do. And then I forgot about it. And I went off and I did my acting thing. And then I got a chance to write for this radio comedy show in Wales called 30-something else, So I think 1994. And I wrote two episodes a week for 6 weeks and loved it and told my wife, this is it. I found it. I'm going to be a writer. This is what I'm going to do. And then did not write a word when that job finished for a little while. And then I thought, oh, I better buy a writing correspondence course to get myself to write. And I'll talk more about why getting yourself to write is an interesting thing. And that I did, I never completed the first lesson of that correspondence course. And so I didn't write another word until I moved to America in 2000. And I decided, I'd actually somebody come to me and say, hey, the problem with you is that if somebody isn't in the room with you when you come up with an idea, the idea disappears because you don't like to repeat yourself, you know, and it's a shame because some of those ideas are really good. And so I got the idea, oh, maybe I should write, you know? And so I started writing these daily newsletters. I didn't know they were called blogs back then. And it was called the Daily Coaching Tip. And I wrote every day, Monday to Friday, it's actually Sunday to Thursday. They came out Monday to Friday for a year, 225 blog posts. And that was the year where I realized, oh, there's something to this. There's something more I can do. Now, by that point, anyways, I'm going to try and keep the bits of the story that are relevant. Here's the thing. I had thought about being a writer. I'd even ghostwritten a book since 1984. That was when that creative writing class was. I didn't start writing regularly until 2000. So if this is something you've thought about for a long time and you think, ah, yeah, but it's too late. No, it really isn't too late. Okay. That's 16 years, 94, 90, yeah, that's 16 years before I even started writing regularly. And then it was another 5 before I tried my hand at writing my own book. So the first thing to realize is it's not too late. It's never too late. It doesn't matter if you've thought about this forever. At some point, if you start writing, you'll find out whether or not you're a writer. Now, here's the second thing that I think is relevant to pretty much all writers. And I'm going to go to the phones. Numbers to call 866-254-1579. Outside the U.S. and Canada, 001-760-918-4300. People say, oh, you must love writing because you write so much. And it's like, sometimes I do, sometimes I really don't. What is consistent is I love reading what I've written. And what's helpful about knowing that I don't have to love the process of writing, but that I'll always love reading what I've written, is it means I don't get too caught up in being in the mood. Right? I write when there's something to write. I write when I have something to say, or I write when I have a deadline to write to. It's not really true to say I write for the love of writing, but I do love writing a lot of the time. And I love, as I say, reading what I've written. Now here's why I don't think that's egotistical. Maybe it turns out to be egotistical and hey, fair enough. I love reading what I've written because it's unexpected. I love the process of writing because I literally do not know what is going to come out until I start. And not everything that comes out is usable, but everything that comes out has that flavor of the unknown. It has that flavor of the creative source. And I love watching something come from nothing. I love that process. That, to me, is the essence of great writing. Now, there is a skill to writing a story, a book, an article to do with crafting and editing. That's part of the writing process. But the basic creative spark from nothing to something, from the big nothing, the big unknown, the not yet created, to words on a page. That, for me, is the essence of what we do as writers. We're alchemists. We spin gold from lead. We create something from nothing. We put language, we use language to create experiences for our readers. And that's just a really cool thing to do. Third thing, and then I'm going to shut up and listen to you. But the third thing that I think is really, that I've learned along the way. So I was 8 books in between my editing and ghosting and writing my own books. And I hired a writing coach. And in fact, I hired Steve Chandler, who I'm going to be co-teaching with at the end of the month at michaelneal.org/writer, that you can attend it live or you can attend it virtually. And I hired him because I thought I should write more regularly. I'm very much a deadline writer. So if there's a deadline, I write. If there isn't, I don't. And I'm experiencing it right now. Creating the Impossible is already available for pre-sale. You can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all good booksellers. I'm still working on it, right? But it will be done before it's actually delivered to your home. Well, I thought that was a problem. I really did. I thought I need to become disciplined like writers I had read about, like Stephen Pressfield, who wrote The War of Art, and Becoming a Professional, you know, who writes daily no matter what. Like W. Somerset Maugham, who's reputed to have said, I only write when inspiration strikes. Fortunately, it strikes every morning at 9 a.m. promptly. Like, was it Balzac or I think it's Victor Hugo, who would have himself locked in his bathroom naked, and his servant would pass 3 pieces of parchment and there'd be ink and a quill inside, and his servant was under instructions not to let him out of the bathroom or give him his clothes until he had passed 3 pages filled, you know, darkened the page under him. And I thought, yeah, I need to be that kind of disciplined. And to be absolutely honest, all Steve said to me was, are you crazy? And I said, what do you mean? And he said, how many books have you done? It was 8 or 8 at the time. And he said, and how they've done? And I said, well, they've all been bestsellers and blah, 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 blah. And he said, well, apparently this is how you write. Now, it had never dawned on me that my way of writing didn't have to look like any other writer's way of writing. That my way of approaching my craft didn't have to look like anybody else's way. And that, in fact, there were people out there who were probably wanting to copy the way I wrote because I was fairly prolific. However you do it is how you do it. Now, that doesn't mean it won't change. That doesn't mean you can't learn. That doesn't mean you can't grow. But your writing practice, your writing content, the way you go about it is unique to you. It's a dance between you and the creative force. That dance is your creativity. That dance is the game. And none of us can control it, but we can learn to dance with it. And that is the essence, I think, of what it takes to become a great writer, is just falling in love with the dance between you and the creative force, and then being willing to stay in the game long enough to actually produce something. So let's start in New York City with Kika. Kika, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Thank you for your work, by the way. I just recently discovered your work in your books. I don't know if you watched the Emmy Awards, but one screenwriter won her first Emmy Award for Best Written Drama Episode. Mm-hmm. And when she got on stage, she used the real names of those who helped her to get to that point. And among those names was yours.
So, really? No, I had no idea. Was that this year's Emmys?
No.
Oh, okay.
And
gosh.
She said you gave her an insight when she feared writing. She was a writer who doesn't write. And there was something that you said that suddenly made it effortless and flowing, and she was trusting So I was wondering if you would give me that insight. Sorry, I told you.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd love to. I'm sitting here going, who the heck was that? Well, so what's let me make it your insight rather than her insight. So what, you know, it says they type up a little summary on my screen, and what they typed up for you is, she's a writer who doesn't write, how to be more trusting and confident to start working.
Right.
What does it mean to you to say that you're a writer who doesn't write?
It means that I have all the time and all the means, and I've read every possible book, and I had the coaches, and I went to the seminars, and every day I scheduled to write, and when I arrive at the computer, I shake, I get anxious. If I manage to force myself to write something, my brain says, are you kidding me? This is stupid. This is doesn't make sense. This will never work. And then I stop. So basically, even though I call myself a screenwriter, no one hires me. But what I'm trying to do these days is to write a couple of samples so then I can look for an agent and then maybe get hired. Mm-hmm. But I don't get anything written because I'm so afraid to write badly.
Okay, so here's what I just, as you described that, I thought there's two key differences between what you do and what I do, and I want to highlight them. So the first one is, in fairness, I don't shake when I sit down to write. I don't feel much of anything particular. Like if I'm having a lovely day, I feel lovely. If I'm having an icky day, I feel icky. But like there's no particular feeling that comes with sitting down to write for me. But the more important one, and we'll come back to that first one because it is relevant. The more important one is when I think to my, when the voice in my head says, oh God, this is terrible. Oh God, what are you doing? Oh God, you've lost it. Maybe you never had it. You're not going to get away with this for much longer, et cetera, et cetera. I keep writing. In other words, one of the things I've learned about the voice in my head is it's just a voice in my head. It's not the voice of God. It just sounds like it thinks it is. And like all thoughts that come through my head, I don't have to do anything with them. Right? There's a lot of clouds in the sky. I don't have to engage with each one or listen to their advice. So there is an element to which it would seem, a lot of people think, oh, how do I get more positive? How do I get those nasty critical thoughts out of my head? It's like, you don't have to. Like, I have nasty critical thoughts in my head all the time. I just don't listen to them most of the time. And occasionally I do, and I have a bad day because of it. But, you know, that to me makes me human, not a problem.
Right.
Now, the other part of it is connected, the fear that you feel sitting down to the page. Now, do you know where fear comes from? Not your fear specifically, but like fear.
Experiencing danger.
Well, so there's two kinds of fear. There's primal fear, which is an experience of a clear and present danger. Like, mm-hmm. In other words, if there was, you know, this is the classic story. If there was actually a lion in the room with you, your body would respond to that. And you'd get a huge surge of adrenaline that would give you at least a chance of outrunning or outfighting or outsmarting the lion. But 99.9% of fear is thought in the moment. It's literally, we're feeling what we think. So we're thinking scary thought and feeling scared. Now, the reason that that matters so much is because thought comes and goes if we let it. Fear, in that sense, is pretty irrelevant to the creative process. Sometimes you'll feel it when you're thinking scary thoughts and they look kind of real. And sometimes you won't when you're not thinking scary thoughts. But I promise you, there is not a lion in your word processor. Right? There is zero chance of that 0.1% of actual primal relevant fear being present when you sit down to write. So it's kind of like every time you sit down to write, you run some kind of horror film in your mind and you don't notice that that's what's happening. And so you just feel fear and you think it's about writing.
Well, the moment I sit down and nothing comes to my mind, when if I want to develop a character or write some dialogue, and just nothing comes. So I wait a few minutes and then I say, you see, you got nothing today, so just close the notebook and, you know, keep searching for a new coach or something. And I think you always look at what you have, is you have that river flowing and you'll always have, so you look at your imagination as so abundant, and I see myself as someone who stood in line and there was no imagination left for me, and therefore I'm screwed.
Right. So there's two things there that I think are interesting and maybe helpful. One is, I actually don't know that I look at my imagination and think, ooh, river flowing. I look at the creative force, which is something that exists beyond me. In other words, when I write, when any of us write, we're tapping into something that was here before humans, right? We're tapping into something that is, you know, as old as time itself, because time is one of the first creations of this creative force. Right? I tap into what Aristophanes tapped into. I tap into what, I'm going to show my lack of erudition. Voltaire tapped into. I'm like trying to find writers from throughout the ages. It's like, it's not my imagination. My imagination, my intellect is the seasoning on my writing. It's not the meat. So because it comes through me, it's me flavored. If you read a Michael Neal book, it will taste a little bit of Michael Neal. If I've got it right, it won't taste too much of him, because a little goes a long way with our personal seasoning. But it will have an element of that which is in all of us. That's why people connect to it, because it's in all of us. And you've got that because that's not you. Right. In other words, one of the great things about any creative endeavor is it's not about us, unless we make it about us. It's about this giving voice to this creative flow, to this innate creative force. So let me ask you a question. I'm going to tell you a quick story and you tell me if you can see the relevance of it to the way that you approach writing. So my son, when he was 14, he's actually just back from college today for the Easter holidays. I'm very excited. I got to sneak in a hug with him upstairs before I came down to do the show. When he was about 14, he was starting to play tennis. He was thinking about trying out for the tennis team in high school. And so we would go out and we would play whenever I could. And he would really get down on himself, because he'd miss hit and he'd hit the ball into the net and he'd hit the ball out and occasionally hit the ball out of the whole court. And at a certain point, I watched him kind of just beating up on himself and getting more and more downhearted and losing any love that he may have at one point had for the game. And I said to him, Alls, you're not allowed to have an opinion about how you're playing for the first 100 hits of every practice session. So the first 100 balls we hit, I literally do not care what you think of them and don't want to hear it. Said after 100, if you want to start having an opinion, you can have an opinion again. Now, look, that's me and my son. I'm not saying that that's the conversation everybody would have. Well, he kind of got it and he took to it. And do you know what? He continued to mishit and hit some bad balls and do some things that indicated his current level of tennis playing ability in those first 100 balls. But it was interesting because by the time we got through 100 hits each time we practiced, he didn't care how he was playing. A, he was playing better, but B, he was in the flow of the game. And when you're in the flow of the game, you're in the flow of the game. Your opinion about it kind of doesn't matter. So when you hear that story, how does that relate to your experience as a writer?
I want you to be my father.
Yeah, I don't know how that works.
No, I mean, this is an incredible advice you gave him. Like the moment you just said that, I felt a relief thinking, what if I would have embraced that?
Well, so what if you do now? Like, why don't you be an incredible parent to yourself? And why don't you give yourself that same permission? You know, the first 30 minutes of a writing session. Who cares what you think about what comes through or if nothing comes through? Right? The first 1,000 words on the page are a freebie. You don't get to have an opinion about them.
That's so freeing.
It is, because we're free. I mean, that's actually us. We are actually already free. It's just we put all this crap on our shoulders and then wonder why it's so heavy all the time.
It feels lighter now.
All right. Well, then I would love it if you would phone back in a future show and let me know how it's going.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kika.
Bye-bye.
You know, it really is funny, but that's it. Like, we make things hard, and we all have reasons. Like, you know, we have what seem like good reasons. Oh, you know, but what makes it so hard is that we make it about us. And we're already all so neurotic and uptight. And no offense. I mean, maybe you're not. Maybe you're the one. But pretty much everyone I meet has an opinion about themselves, and it's either overinflated or massively underinflated, right? You know, either think, you know, I meet a few people who think they're perfect and amazing and beautiful and lovely, and they've every idea they have is a great idea. And I meet way more people who think they're hopeless, less than, never going to really amount to anything, but they know they should tell themselves that they are and be positive, and it doesn't matter. Right. I had a chance to work with Gary Shandling, the comedy writer, comedian before he died. And he at one point I jokingly said to him, because he made a face, and I said, "I'm sorry, Gary, am I not praising you enough?" And he laughed and he said, "Don't worry about it. It's a black hole." Right. Creative people instinctively know that it's not about self-esteem. It's not about you. It's about this beautiful, infinite creative potential that can come through you if you let it. Let's go out to Madison, Wisconsin. Let's speak with Karen. Karen, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Oh, my goodness. Exactly what I need to hear today. Thank you.
Cool.
So I'm taking some time off to write. Well, life is preparing downtime for me, and I am so excited for the advice he's given to just step into it and let the flow. And it's not about me. Thank you. Thank you. So any advice as I step into this new space for myself?
Well, what are you writing about?
You know what? I am actually not sure. It's okay. Just coming, what comes through.
Okay, cool. And is this, have you begun, or is this something that's impending?
I have begun many times, and it keeps changing, and I know this message needs to be out there.
So here, I don't know if this quite counts as advice, but this might be helpful. Right. So in my new book, In Creating the Impossible, I talk about the sort of the process of creation. Like, you know, what are the steps and stages, as it were, because they're actually remarkably predictable. You know, they're not really stages in the sense that you have to go through them in a sequence, but they're pretty predictable. And the, you know, everything starts with nothing. So the first sort of stage, the first phase is what I call the big nothing. Right, where you literally just hang out in the unknown. Right, so in ancient Greece, you know, the creative force was personified in as the Muses, the nine Muses. So there was so I think it was Zeus and Nemene who was the personification of memory, had these nine beautiful daughters, and they became the source of creativity. And the early Christian teaching said that only God could create, and that form of creation was in fact called, I can't speak Latin, but it was something in Latin that meant creating from nothing. And that nothing is where we all have to begin. It's the space of no thing. It's the unformed clay. It's the Play-Doh of possibility still in the box. Now that's not, you know, what I sometimes call the little nothing, which is our own sense of, oh, I don't know what I'm going to write about. I don't know what I'm going to write about. I don't know what I'm going to write about. I don't know what I'm going to write about. Right. That's just like, that's actually not nothing. That's already a ton of noise. It's the big nothing. It's the nothing that we can bathe in. It's vast. It contains multitudes. So you're going to wind up the relationship you have with the big nothing. That's going to be a huge part of what will both become your love of writing, but where you'll go back to again and again and again when you don't know what to do. Right? Then the next stage, right? The next phase is diving in and mucking about. Right? You just make a mess of things, right? You go out and play in the mud, right? You know, and that could, so if you're drawing, you start doodling. If you're writing your screenplay, you start just making up, what about this? What if we did this? You know, if you're writing a song, you know, you just start making the kind of sounds that might turn into the song, or you start noodling on your guitar or your piano, you know. So you're messing about. You're putting yourself in the game, and you're kind of just waiting for inspiration to strike. You're kind of just opening yourself up. It's like it'd be like a little seduction dance, like you're trying to seduce the creative force into coming to meet you, you know. And it's not, you know, it doesn't matter what you do in that stage. Like, I use the analogy sometimes, it's like siphoning gas. You just kind of suck on the tube and it starts the flow. It right? When thou, at a certain point, when that flow comes, well, then you start doing the work, right? That's the point where you just, there's a certain point where there's nothing for it but to do it, right? Where you just have to darken the page. Right. I think of this bit as the bit in the middle. So like, you know, the story that our last caller told about the woman who won the Emmy. Well, her story would sound like, oh, I was this struggling writer. And then, you know, Michael Neal and these other great coaches helped me to see that I could write. And now here I am with my Emmy. Well, the bit in the middle is doing the work, right? There's no way that you create anything without at some point sitting down and taking care of business, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, that there comes a point where sometimes it feels like you're doing the work, sometimes it feels like you're riding the wave, you know, but like you found your feet, you found enough solid ground to to start to move forward. And then at a certain point, you're going to need to let go. You're going to need to go, ta-da, and you're going to need to just say, here it is. And the quote that I have in the book, which is one of my favorite quotes anyways, but it's actually about, was originally written about parenting. It's from a woman named Elizabeth Stone, and she said, making the decision to have a child, it is momentous. It is to decide forever to have your heart go walking around outside your body. Well, for me, that's true as a writer as well. There comes a certain point where I have to just let it go and see what it does on its own. And for some people, they never get to that stage, and that's why they're always almost done. They're always working on something, but they've never produced anything. Now, every step of that process is valuable and important. Nobody that I know of can write anything of value without starting with nothing. Nobody can just start producing without some time spent mucking about, right? Nobody who doesn't at some point declare completion has ever produced anything. They may have written tons, but there's nothing to show for it. And so all of that is a part of everything that you write. And there is some value in just kind of knowing where you're at any given moment. You know, are you in the big nothing? Are you mucking about? Are you putting in the hours? Are you waiting to be done? You know, I have you're very welcome. You're very, very welcome. And again, please, as you go, call back in. Let's see where you've got to.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, sorry, I got on a roll there. I stopped listening to Karen. I was just talking. But there's something for me about it, right? That, you know, I just that last part, that ta-da, you haven't created anything until it stands on its own two feet in the world. You've just been busy. You know, so for some of you, I'm guessing for a lot of you, because it's the stage where, you know, where I see a lot of people get stuck, you just haven't started, right? You're still thinking about writing, right? You're standing by the edge of the pool, by the edge of the ocean going, I wonder what the water's like, right? You at some point you have to dive in. You have to start writing. Now, some people are stuck because they don't realize that mucking about is part of the process. They think they're supposed to be producing good quality work all the time. My early drafts of my writing, I would never let anybody see. I actually don't let my wife see my books until they're published, because I care way too much about her opinion, and it would affect me unduly if she saw something before I declared it done. I once did an audio program called The Seven Myths of Success. And I was writing the script. I'd written the first part of the script ahead of time, and then I was writing the last part of the script while we were recording. So I was like, did I mention I write to deadline? And I was feeling very downhearted, and I in fact picked up some, you know, I was writing in the studio where we were recording. So there was a ton of old scripts lying around, and I picked up one of these old scripts, and it was so well written. And I just thought to myself, oh God, who am I kidding? Right? My stuff is crap compared to this. And then I realized how tired I was, because I was actually, what I had picked up was my own old script. I'd picked up the finished version of a script and was comparing my mucking about to that finished version. And I had to laugh at myself, because it's like, of course, my early crappy stuff wasn't of the same caliber as the finished product, right? There is just absolutely, you know, there's a time where, you know, I usually talk about it as vomiting onto the page, right? And then you can, I was coaching a writer this morning, and he's really good at vomiting onto the page. The bit that he needs to learn is how to clean up the vomit and just keep the chunks. Sorry, it's a very graphic analogy. But, you know, so maybe you're stuck there is that you think you're not supposed to muck about, or you don't have permission to muck about, right? Maybe where you're stuck, right, not uncommon at all, is you're stuck because you're just not putting in the hours, right? You think it's all gotta, it should just come. Well, sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Putting in the hours is the unsung hero of the creative process, not just for writing, but for anything creative. So maybe it's just that. Maybe it's just you just need to write more. And then sometimes where people are stuck is they just can't quite bring themselves to declare it done. I have some friends who have been writing a book, and I would use air quotes around that if you could see them, since I met them in 2008. And for a few years, I was very excited about reading their book. And then I came to see, no, they're not writing a book. They're writing, they're talking, they're thinking, but they really have no intention of declaring it done, of letting it live. Now, there's, look, I understand that, right? Part of what that is you think, oh, it could be better. Yeah, it probably could be. But at a certain point, in order to free up the space to create the next thing, you have to declare the one you're working on done. You have to be willing to walk away and to see if it takes on a life of its own. And when it does, it's the most beautiful thing in the world to watch your creation, your piece of writing out in the world doing stuff. And sometimes it doesn't. And that's part of the game too. So, numbers to call, 866-254-1579, outside the U.S. and Canada, 001-760-918-4300. Before I go back, I want to again share. So if you are interested in this, if you want to go deeper into this, please join us for the Writer's Weekend. It's going to be myself and Steve Chandler, and we're going to be working with the people in the group. And there'll be both, you can be there on live stream, which means you can watch it at home on your computer, or you can be there in the room with us here in LA. And those of you who don't know Steve, he's not only a very brilliant guy and a very prolific guy, but he's a very funny guy. So I you know, you'll enjoy yourself tremendously. But what we've decided, what we want to do in that room is we want to talk to you. We want to coach you, right? We don't need to share best practices. You can read about best practices. We want to actually work with you, your creation, your writing, your stuckness if you're stuck, but also your creativity as you go forward. So you can learn more about that at michaelneal.org/writer. And nothing to do with writing at all, but for those of you who are interested, our sort of signature program, Super Coach Academy, which I offer most years, and it's a full 6-month coach training. You get to spend 15 days live with me, as well as weekly master classes on business and coaching. And if you are a professional coach, you want to bring more of the way I work into what you do, or you just would like to become a coach, it's a sort of a soup to nuts program. And maybe somebody else could call in and explain to me what soup to nuts means. I actually have no idea. It's an expression I've heard that I think means all in. But anyways, it's a soup to nuts program. And you can find out more about that at supercoachacademy.com. Let me share a little bit more about the, not so much the creative process, but like the two, there are a couple of elements to the creative flow. And one is a sort of a very masculine element, and one is a very feminine element. And I don't mean like girly and boy-y. I mean feminine as in feminine energy, receptive, masculine and as in a outgoing energy. And essentially the creative flow is a continual movement from the receptive to the creative, from the feminine to the masculine and back again. It's the dance between the yin and the yang. It's the dance between the doing and the not doing. It's the dance between doing the work and sitting in the big nothing. And when people get blocked, it's generally on one side of the flow. So imagine a pipe that's open at both ends and water flows through the pipe. And the more expansive the pipe, the more water can flow through it. And then imagine that the outflow part of the pipe gets blocked, right? So, it, you know, the water comes in, but it's got nowhere to go and it backs up and the pipe gets filled up and the flow gets backed up. And if it stays blocked, either the pipe is going to lose its integrity and start springing leaks, or the water is going to find another path out into the world. Well, that's what happens when we don't sit down to write. We have lots of ideas, and those ideas start to back up, and they start to kind of fill us up, but there's no outlet for it. And so you keep inputting information, you keep inputting ideas. The woman earlier was saying, you know, and so I hire another coach, and I hire another coach, and you keep getting ideas in, but you never actually get around to creating anything in the world. And eventually you get so overwhelmed that it feels like your head is going to explode and you shut down. Like, that's one way we lose touch with the creative flow. But now imagine that same pipe open at both ends and we block the inlet. Right? So now no water can come in. Well, depending on the size of the pipe, water would continue to flow out for a while. But after a while, it would dry up because nothing new is coming in. That's what happens when we try to do too much too quickly. Right? We don't give ourselves time for any creative input. We just produce, try and write. It was funny, one of the authors I worked with years ago, I introduced him to a screenwriter that I was working with. He was a very successful screenwriter, was actually not just wrote his own screenplays, but was a screen doctor, a script doctor, which basically meant that he got paid to fix other people's scripts. And in the movie business, that's big business. You know, he would get $50,000, I think he's up to $100,000 a week for working on a script. And my friend who wanted to be a writer, you know, was saying, boy, you know, I just, you know, once I get 6-8 hours in, I get really tired. And the very successful writer just looked at him and went, you write for 6 to 8 hours? He said, if I have 3 good hours a day, that's a good day. And it again just showed the difference in what we make up about writing, that, okay, I've got to do it. And admittedly, I'm sure there are some writers who can do 6 to 8 hours a day steadily and not run out of ideas. But most writers that I know, it's you got to make space. That's why in the program, The Artist's Way, the two things that Julia Cameron asks everyone to do in that program are to write every day. So they write what she calls the morning pages, where for half an hour, 45 minutes a day, you just write, stream of consciousness stuff, just to kind of like siphon that flow, just to get that flow going, to get the noise out of your head, the personal noise, and make space for that divine energy to come through. And then the other thing that she asks everyone to do is at least once a week to go on an artist state, where you deliberately do something that you think is going to inspire you, is going to nurture that part of yourself, is going to kind of stimulate the openness, the availability, the love of creating, of art. And it's nice, because what those two exercises do is they focus on the masculine and the feminine. The output, the outflow, okay, I'm writing something every day, even if it's just stream of consciousness. And opening that pipe up and keeping that pipeline to the divine, that pipeline to the spiritual creative energy open. And, you know, that's what's required. Both of those things need to be available, need to be present. Let's go to Texas and let's speak to Maria. Maria, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi. I'm in the process of writing a memoir, and I have a blog out. And I just started that blog in July. And as I was starting to write, my niece was helping me with the editing. Mm-hmm. And so I turn it in, and she'd, you know, kind of fine-tune things, and then I'd send it out, and I'd get this positive feedback of, wow, you're a great writer. This is so nice. This is so good. And then as I start to write my next blog, I keep thinking, well, I kind of feel like a fraud because my niece is going to fix this. And it's not all my writing. I mean, it is, but it's not that quality, that finished product. So I find myself just being a perfectionist. And as I write, I'm like editing as I write. I don't just throw it all out there.
Yeah,
I'm like constantly trying to write the way she edits.
So here's how I think of the distinction. It's the distinction between being a writer and being an author. Now, I'm making that up, okay? But an author is the author of a work. They are the authority on it. They author it. They create it. A writer is somebody who's really good with words.
Mm-hmm.
So you could be a great author without being a great writer. You can be a great writer without being a great author, and every now and again you can get lucky and be both.
Mm-hmm.
So James Patterson is an example of somebody that is, as best I understand, is both author and writer. So he used to write his own books. Now, you know, one of the reasons why there are 8 James Patterson books, I think actually it's up to 1 a month now that come out. You know, he's the best-selling author of all time, I think, in terms of just volume. And sales is because he authors books, but somebody else writes them now.
Oh, okay.
Right now, people can be snobby about it, but I'm kind of open to learning from the best-selling writer of all time that he's willing to be author, even though he happens to also be a pretty good writer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There are plenty of writers in the world who you'll never hear of because they write. But they don't, for whatever reason, they either don't have the inclination or that extra bit of chutzpah to author something, to actually kind of put their name on it and put their stamp on it and declare, this is it. This is me for now, for today.
Mm-hmm.
So if you kind of, what I'm hoping for you, Maria, is that legitimizes not having to be a perfect writer in order to author your blogs.
Okay. So just, I guess, to be gentle with myself, because I'm, like I said, I'm analyzing every line I put down, trying not to have the editor do so much work herself so that I can write like her, or, you know, because I'm getting such positive feedback.
Right. And chances are, right, that the positive feedback is at least 80% for what you're authoring and maybe 20% for the writing, too.
True.
One of the rare memoirs I've seen where I actually, when I finished the memoir, I looked up the ghostwriter. Was Andre Agassi's Open. I don't know if you read it.
Yeah.
It is masterfully written. So it's a great story. So Andre Agassi has authored a great book, but even he in the acknowledgments acknowledges that the writer did a beautiful job of bringing his story to life.
Huh. That's a good point. Okay. Huh. Do you deal with perfectionism when you write?
Yes, but not until I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
So literally with my editor, we will argue commas and semicolon placement, but not until there's already a book to argue it about. I've just realized I'm having too much fun. We are out of time. Thank you, Maria. Thank you, everybody who phoned in this week. Again, michaelneal.org/writer. If you're interested in the Writer's Weekend, until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.